Guys.
Yep.
I need your help. I don't know if I've talked about this publicly. I'm moving to sunny coastal California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I know. But I don't have a lot of time. In fact, I have no time and I need to pack my entire house.
Okay. Right.
And I have like a week, but I want to spend that week mostly eating good food.
Right.
So I think that gives me about like 5 hours.
You know,
hours
everything's
to pack.
Vegan in California, right? Like,
oh, yeah, that's why I'm that's why
loud.
I mean, they do have a Panda Express, so he can hit that up.
They
if
have
he wants.
One Panda Express
yeah.
down in Santa yeah. Cruz. Mm-hmm. But it's all the line is always so crazy because everybody goes there to get the only meat in the whole state.
But guys, how do I pack my house?
Don't pack your house. You don't need like you don't need any of that. Yeah, can I tell you, look around you and you might see like I'm just judging by what I see from the camera, but like where you see hundreds of stuffed animals, I see of every different shape and stripe, I see weight that is keeping you down, that is holding you back.
Like, look at those stacks of adult butt medicine that you use for yourself, and like, you don't need all that adult butt medicine, Chris.
Chris, I'm seeing a lot of leather bound, and it seems like you've bound them, and it says Playboy with all the articles cut out. And, and you like arrange them by year. That's just holding you down, man.
Yeah, man.
You probably couldn't tell, but if you look really close at my butt medicine, there's actually two flavors. There's the American Preparation H, and there's the one I brought back from my honeymoon in Italy, Preparation H.
You are a collector, if nothing else. I want to say also, I would leave behind the large box that has flies swarming around it that just says vagrants written on it. That's horrifying.
That's weird, man.
That might be evidence that you should leave behind just for your own legal protection.
And let me just count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, you don't need 8 PewDiePie fatheads hanging on your wall. Like, I think just 1 PewDiePie fathead would probably be enough.
Just do the one that you love the most that
your
speaks Menendez to you.
Those Brothers Funko Pops are adorable.
There's so many of them.
You don't need them. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I do know the best game of the week. What's up?
My name is Chris Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Ross Froschick, and I know the best three of the week. It was E3.
Hey, everybody. Lady. Welcome to the show, The Besties. It's a video game club, and just by listening, you are a member. We're trying something new and different this week, shaking up the format by talking about it, a good new game. And I think we're all, if you can sense a little bit of giddiness, I think it's the excitement of talking about a new good game. And this one, this is going to actually freak your bean a little bit. You know, the new consoles that came out last year, it's made for those. They're finally making games for them now, which is fun.
It's cool.
Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
It's a platformer shooter, and it's the latest in a long series of Ratchet and Clank games. But the first new one in quite a while. I think the last one we got was a reboot based off the movie at the same time. Anyway,
I think it was
colorful.
A reboot of the first game. It was, anyway, it came out in like 2014 or something wild like that.
Yeah, so it's been a while, and it's a great new game. And I would love to hear your all's thoughts, opinions, hopes, and dreams.
Justin, you mentioned that we haven't had a ton of dedicated for the new consoles releases. The only three that we've had for PlayStation 5 are Demon's Souls, Returnal. Actually, there's been four. Demon's Souls, Returnal, this game, and Astro's Playroom is the other
one. Yeah, if you count that.
Hell yeah, I do. Fucking rocked.
There's no reason not to.
And this week was E3, as some people might know. We'll talk about E3 a little bit in the second half of the show. But in watching all the trailers from E3, it is instantly obvious to me which games are targeting the new hardware and which games are targeting the, let's put it on everything, and then we'll make the new, the new versions, we'll optimize them for the new hardware. The difference is night and day, and really there is no better representation of that than Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, a game that literally would not be able to run on a PlayStation 4 Pro or anything like it because of a number of things.
I want to get to Ratchet and Clank, but to go to the E3 comment you just said, what you mean is none of the games are targeting the new consoles? Is that what you meant to say? Because I don't think that there were any standout
there were
games.
A couple.
What to you? This is gonna be an interesting show because we have like a big press conference and we have a big game at the same time. But is there anything like that you see where it's like, wow, now that's next generation?
To keep it anchored in the game that we're discussing right now, I didn't necessarily see anything that looked as good as Ratchet and Clank.
But that's
tough to judge that just because of, you know, those games aren't real or done yet. I feel like I have to issue a pretty huge like mea culpa here in that I am like very quick to dismiss sort of technical the technical sort of stats of games as being something I give a shit about. Like I want games to have a smooth frame rate, whether it's 30 or 60, like I don't really care. But when you know, people start getting really Mark Cerny on it, like I just go to static and don't really care. And so I want the load times, those fast load times on the PlayStation 5, but everything else, I was like, who gives a shit? And this is the game, and this is a truly staggering accomplishment, I feel like, that proves that there needed to be a new generation of consoles. It looks good in a way that I've never really seen a game look good before. And it's tough to kind of put that into words. Like, there's very reductionist. I've seen a lot of people say, like, it's like a Pixar movie that you can play. But that breaking that barrier between this is a very, very polished cutscene and this is the game that you're playing, this game like shatters that barrier in a way that is it takes your breath away. It is an incredibly good looking game.
To run with the movie comparison, I think what comes to mind for me is more like so in this game, I should set this as a base first, you are in I guess like a multiple universe rip up thing where you are able to jump between spaces effectively instantaneously. And that is possible because of the technology of the PS5, that there doesn't have to be these like load times, that you can load up and span massive amounts of space, get virtually in an instant, which allows for effectively cuts the way you would have them in a movie, right? And like, that's what I imagine with this is like, if you think way, way, way back when people were like watching a movie and it's just, you know, a static image imitating theater, and then a cut happened and then more cuts kept happening, and people were like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, what is happening here?
Right.
This is a bit disorienting. And then everybody got used to it. I feel the same thing is happening here on a obviously smaller degree. But like, how many of y'all got nauseous playing this game at first? Because I was getting queasy from how rapidly it was shooting me from place to place.
Yeah, and also the game opens on a big futuristic parade. And so it is just like full, and it also has a sort of Uncharted level like opening catastrophe sort of thing happening. That is just a complete overstimulation, like complete visual overload. I don't think we should get bogged down in talking about like how the game looks, because it's not something that's very interesting to listen to people talk to. I just want to say that like, this is not my genre of game that I really like. I don't give a crap about this franchise, really. This is the first game that I've really made a dent into in the Ratchet and Clank series. And I don't know if I'm going to like stick with it to the end. But all that said, I think it's worth playing to see it. Like, I think it's worth playing because of how incredible it looks.
Like, it does look incredible, but I mean, for me, I get inured to graphic, like a lot of people, I think. This thing is consistently great looking. I don't love the aesthetics. It's not my thing, but like the speed at which it shifts and some of the set pieces, like it made me kind of bummed that Uncharted isn't currently, you know, headed towards PS5. I mean, probably at some point. But like currently not, because the way that like these set pieces just like move through the environment, and like the speed at which you're doing like this huge piece over here and then you're moving on. There's one where you're like grinding while escaping a giant robot, and like you're jumping between tracks, and the whole thing looks amazing. But like, honestly, for me, I have a similar background with Ratchet and Clank. I have no reference for these games. I platforming is not really my thing to begin with, but like, which I guess these are more like action platform, but still, the variety of weapons and the weapons in this game are all uniformly really fun to use and like make these big set piece fights where you've got like 30 enemies on screen and you've got all these really cool guns to dispatch them. There's like one that's called Ricochet, right? Where you shoot a shot out and it hovers midair. And as you repeatedly pull the trigger, it ping pongs from that static position into the enemy while making like pinball type noises. And you like the better you time the bouncing of the bullet off the enemy, the more damage you do. And that's just like one of like dozens of maybe not dozens. There's probably about 20 or so weapons in the game that are all just like really fun. There's like a the topiary sprinkler. Did you guys get that?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, it's a turret that you throw down on the ground that looks like a sprinkler, and it's shooting water out all around you, except it transforms whatever enemies it hits into static topiaries, covers them in greenery, freezes them in place, and lets you like really wail on them. And then all these guns level up as you use them, and when they hit level 5, they actually change into a different form. So the topiary sprinkler becomes the toxiary sprinkler, and it's like adds a poisoning artifact. Or there's another turret type guy named Mr. Fungus, which is great because Mr. Fun Guy, there it is, because you throw him on the ground and he makes like quips while he's shooting, and then when you level him up to level 5, he gets Ms. Fun Guy, and they both appear when you lay it down. And there's like so much variety and experimentation that makes going back and forth between the weapons really fun.
Yeah, I the
I
thing
think you're
that
about
I keep
to say
going,
something wrong, and I really
no, no,
need
no.
you to take
I,
a
it's
sec-
gonna
okay.
be right. Don't worry.
Okay,
don't worry. Good. The thing that I keep going back to is like I've played a lot of Ratchet and Clank games. A lot of this is pretty par for the course. Like they've always had really creative weapons. The characters have always been very consistent. The thing that continues to blow me away in this game, and again, I know Griffin talked about the load times, but there are moments in this game like that I've never seen in another video game before, just because of the technical limitations. The idea that you can be in a boss fight and you'll be fighting the boss, and then at one point the boss reaches some like health threshold, whatever, and he'll yank you. You'll start, let's say, in like an ice arena, and he'll yank you, and suddenly you're on top of a volcano, and there's no load time and there's no transition time, and it's just like, I've never seen like a full level, full texture, full everything change in an instant like that. And you cannot do that on any other piece of hardware, except for maybe a Series X.
Right? Maybe. Like, we've yet to see what a game on Series X looks like, but there's like I was even running into like moments where it was disorienting, not in a motion sickness way, but in like a stupid brain, like, room full of theater watching the train come at the movie screen and like, get out of the way. There are these rifts that you hit with this, I don't know, it's like a grappling.
It's like a crystal thing.
Crystal something, whatever. But there's rifts at a distance that you can shoot and pull the rift towards you, if you can imagine this. And then you go through the rift and suddenly you have teleported to where the rift was. And it's
This is an important distinction.
Yes.
What was on the other side of the rift teleports to where you are.
Right.
And that if that sounds complicated.
You're not warping there. You're warping that place to where you are. It's absolutely like, the first time I did it, I needed a second. I was like, okay, I need to get my bearings again.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how they did that. And my best guess is that it turns the entire world outside of the rift effectively into a matte painting. And then pulls like that matte painting to you, and then you enter the spot and you've teleported.
They layer that with a I've played again just a little bit of Ratchet and Clank, but I don't remember the platforming being as like prime Prince of Persia level demanding as like you're doing a double jump into an air dash, into a wall run, into another air dash, to another wall run, and then you jump and swing, and then you grab one of these rifts and pull yourself towards it and have to like do all these things in it. The combat in this game is great, as Juice said, because of all the different sort of ways you have to dispatch enemies, and the progression of those is like great. There's a lot of collectibles and a lot of ways to upgrade and make it your own. But the platforming is like also really fucking good, and they have lots of little bonus secret things like sub-levels that you can go and explore to get like costume pieces and more upgrade materials and stuff. It's the platforming is really, really good.
Yeah, Griffin mentioned the collectibles bit. It's actually one of the very few games that like does collectibles extremely well, because every single, there's like gold bolts that are hidden throughout the world, and every single one of those unlocks like a fun visual customization for the game, where like the currency, the normal currency, is like a bunch of screws and nuts and bolts and stuff, and you can change all those to like soda cans or like coins or like gems, and like every little aspect of your character can kind of be tweaked in interesting ways that encourages you to seek this stuff out beyond just like, oh, I want to get a trophy for it. It's like really smart.
The only thing that I find kind of like a bummer about this game doesn't even have to do with the game. I mean, the game being so great is kind of the thing. Platformers are a great way to test the early boundaries of a console, right? Like we saw that with so many consoles in the PS2, Crash Bandicoot, Super Mario. So I'm really excited that this shows that it works. I go back to what we said about E3, and did we really see anything that is like truly targeting the next generation? I wonder if we will see something like this again in earnest for another 2 or 3 years
I don't know.
The soonest. Because I feel like now that Sony realizes how hard it is to actually get these consoles out there, it feels like they're kind of backing up on this. Oh yeah, everything's for the next gen. We know for a fact that Horizon sequel is going to be on PS4. It sounds like the God of War sequel will probably be on PS4. Gran Turismo will probably be too. I think they realize between one, just having a massive install base, and two, like the PS5 just isn't out there. Like, I was trying to think of why is Sony not at E3 this year, and I think the answer is like, why would you go show new games for a console people can't buy? That's just like a bad vibe. So I hope that we get more stuff like this. At the same time, I just wonder if this was like one of those, like, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and now we're going to backpedal a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is what they wanted fucking Knack to be, except it's good. Like, Knack is going to be like, hey, check out all these particles. Check out all these little moving pieces that you can see all at the same time. This game was built to show off what the PS4 is capable of. And you're like, cool, it's not fun. But this one does all that shit and is also incredible, like a really good platformer.
I'm kind of building off what Plant said, but I've been thinking a lot about like watching E3 and the games that are being announced there, and looking at like the fact that like PlayStation 5 demand may not catch up next year, like may still be lagging behind like well into 2022. I think we will see a sea change at this point, where it will be weird to expect games like this at this point in the cycle of a console, because I think if you look at what has happened with the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox, like the demand, and this has been proven now to the manufacturers, like this demand is not dependent on new games. Like, and so it economically won't make sense to have big new games when a new platform comes out. People will, like, I think this is going to be the norm, where you see these games that are like, I mean, the next God of War is straddling PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. This is the way it's going to be from now on. Like, it is not going to be like that hard cut and then everybody on to the next thing. And
there
and
will be a moment.
You think big picture about stuff like this too. I'd love to know if you line up with that. But I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah, the weird thing is, I think that's 100% true for this generation. But the weird thing is, in 7 years or whatever for the next generation, by then cloud streaming will actually finally, at long last, be working. And it might not even matter. I think about...
An investment in American infrastructure that I don't know that we will see.
I don't know that they would wait for an investment in American infrastructure to like make the switch.
Exactly.
No, I'm just saying the capabilities of actually doing, like the capabilities of reliably doing it and the cost of doing it and everything.
Yeah, I mean we'll see on that.
Bandwidth infrastructure.
Yeah, but just one really quick thought on that though. What's bonkers to me about this moment is, I said, you know, what thing is truly targeting modern consoles, and the only thing that actually does come to mind, they seem to like barely be able to get to run on a damn console, which is Microsoft Flight Simulator. So on one side we have like everything's being targeted for the previous generation, and on the other side we have a game that like is now taking a year to maybe get to run. They still can't put a release date on it.
Right.
I'm not even sure if it'll run on Xbox S. That's like unclear to me.
It's weird.
So it's just weird that these consoles are in a weird spot between the old consoles being way less powerful and the top-end GPUs being like absurdly powerful.
And that only gets weirder with, like, you know, there's a global pandemic that's fucking up supply lines and a global semiconductor chip shortage that's affecting
Bitcoin mining.
Well, yeah, it's all one big thing. And if it weren't for that stuff, there'd be more PlayStation 5s and the install base would be bigger and maybe we'd be having a different conversation. Regardless, the conversation we're having right now has very little to do with Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart out now on PlayStation 5. Insomniac, you've done it again.
What a
real
segue.
Good game. And also, can I say, the sort of humor in these games and like writing in these games like really does it for me, but I genuinely enjoyed the
game. It is very refreshing to have one where it's not like trying so hard.
There's a new protagonist, a female Lombax named Rivet, who is fantastic. And also, I think the game does a really smart thing where all of your progression and skills and weapons and upgrades and everything are consistent between the two characters. You don't have to, like, whenever you switch characters, you don't have to do that annoying thing of like, oh shit, well, what did Rivet have equipped last time I played this? It's
also
all
super smart is that Rivet gets paired up with
Clank.
Right.
And Ratchet gets paired up with a different kind of robot, which is so smart. I don't know if this is intentional. So smart if you have a franchise that's been away a very long time.
Yeah.
Because there's no inbuilt camaraderie that you feel like you're missing out on, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like there's all these, like, even very early in the game, they're making references to, like, stuff that, like, maybe happened, maybe didn't. I have no way of knowing. But, like, introducing these new relationships to get on board with makes it a lot easier to engage with because I don't feel like I'm missing some shared character history.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really, I think, terrific. They did a great job. It's amazing that Insomniac has released at this point Miles Morales. They updated the last Spider-Man game to PS5, like, pretty dramatically. And now this game, like...
What the fuck is everybody else doing?
Crazy.
Like... It's
get off your asses, y'all.
Yeah, man. It doesn't,
and it didn't
it's
crunch.
It's not even that hard. They didn't even crunch on it.
They didn't even crunch on it. Come on, Bill.
Bunch of crunch.
Come on, Phil. All the different ill-sounding guys over at Microsoft. Come on. Just make a new one of something. Come on. All right. Let's, oh my God. I can't believe we haven't even delved into. That's Ratchet & Clank. It's very good. Not everybody can play it. I think this game will have a long tail. I'll say that. Yes. As PlayStation 5s continue to become available, I feel like it's this and Spider-Man and
if they do a pack-in like box, this would be the game I feel like that comes with.
Very smart. Extremely smart.
I mean, by the time you buy a PlayStation 5, you listener at home, it will probably be included in PlayStation Plus as part of PS Plus collection.
Sure.
So don't stress about
it. It sells the console, it sells the hardware better than maybe the best any game has ever sold any hardware. It's like, oh, this is why you need this.
Demon's Souls is also really fucking.
Yeah,
great.
Sure.
It's great. It's a remake. All right, let's take a second to ourselves to get collected, and then we'll talk about the triple E3, a real show happening. We're there, obviously. I still am not used to E3 happening and me not being there, but it is a lot easier when no one else is there. The FOMO this year has been just great.
It's been reduced. Oh, really? Wait, you've been experiencing FOMO?
No, the lack of it. I don't feel any sort of like, oh man, I wish I was where? I mean, I don't.
It's the LOMO.
The LOMO, the lack of missing out.
There's so much to unpack, and I feel like because of the nature of it being always online, an always online experience, more or less this year, it was just the press conferences.
Yes.
Does anybody want to start by saying, let's just go around the horn. Who had the best one this year?
Where, real quick, before we focus on individual games, because I want to do that. Was anybody else like really pleasantly surprised at the amount of stuff that was... I had zero expectations for this E3 because it didn't exist and it has seemed so sort of scattershot and thrown together. Like I was really pleasantly surprised at the amount of stuff that was revealed.
Yeah, I was too. I was actually was not expecting that much. I mean, really, when you boil it down, it was really just like Microsoft's press conference and Nintendo.
There were lots of other ones that
I mean there were and that's true actually Devolver had a really good press conference.
Ubisoft, Capcom.
Yeah, no, you're right. actually, when I think about it, there was a lot. And I wasn't expecting that, but I also think, they did a good job of helping the release calendar with the smaller titles to make it feel like, hey, there were actually games coming out, even if the teams of 300 people are not putting out their games.
Nintendo especially, I think Nintendo had a really, really strong showing. They revealed some great looking new games, new 2D Metroid, hell yeah, like new WarioWare, Advance Wars reboot, like all that was really great and exciting. Another look at the next Breath of the Wild game, that's all great. The biggest thing for me is like almost all the games in Nintendo's press conference are coming out this fall, which was sick because frankly Nintendo needed that worse than anybody else, I think, because looking forward at the release schedule for Nintendo, it was all kind of an empty slate.
But I think Nintendo's thing also hinted very strongly at a thing that is rumored, but they weirdly didn't announce, which is new, better Nintendo Switch hardware is coming. Because, like, you do not release a whole bunch of hardcore fan favorites unless you need to, like, move new hardware. That's
Well, they don't need to move new hardware.
Well, that's that. Like, you time those things together because new hardware is going to be bought by, like, the most hardcore fans. Right. And that's the perfect time to release the Advance Wars remake and the like 2D Metroid. It is not the, you know, casual Nintendo Switch person who is picking it up from Mario Golf who is buying those games.
They also did a neat thing. Yeah, they also did a thing that I've never really seen Nintendo do at E3 before, which was the sort of capstone game for Square Enix's press conferences. They announced a new Marvel's Guardian of the Galaxy game. That is going to be like a, you know, action RPG big game. And Nintendo like circled back to that like close to the beginning of their press conference as a cloud streaming game, which is something that Nintendo has messed around with now a couple times. They have Control Cloud version. They have Hitman 3 Cloud version. And those games work like pretty well. And so it was wild seeing Nintendo say like, we also have this huge third-party game coming to our shit, which was not a move that Nintendo has been able to pull on, you know, Wii U or Wii or really anything else, just because of the huge difference between their hardware and Sony and Microsoft.
Did you notice the disclaimer on that video?
No.
At the very beginning, it's like in very small print, it's like, this is only an example of what would be happening if this was being played at absolute perfect conditions with like a charge connection, and like yada, yada, yada. And it's like, do not expect the game to look
like this.
If
you live at Verizon, this will look great.
Yes, exactly. But I think the strongest show this year was Microsoft, which is wild
because
I don't even have any of the new Microsoft shit. But them having Bethesda like in the roster was, I feel like, has patched up any holes in the ship that they may have had, and pretty much everything they showed off, I was like, okay, yep, that also looks good. Slime Rancher 2, sure, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Okay, why not?
Yeah, they continue to be so far ahead of the field in terms of the Game Pass, like just being a valuable entity, that I just don't know how you catch up at this point. I don't even know if Sony is trying or Nintendo is even considering trying, because Microsoft is so locked into this idea of, so, like, the amount of money they must be making is insane. But it's good because, like, people don't want to have to stress, is this going to be worth my $60? You could play it for 2 hours as part of your fee for the month and don't feel bad if it's, like, shitty. It kind of heralds back to, like, Blockbuster when you picked out the wrong game and then you were just bummed all weekend. Like, no, you could play the other 600 games that are on Game Pass. It's fine.
Juice, your boy Todd got out there, showed everybody a little snippet of Starfield. I was just wondering how that hit for you.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. Like, that looks fantastic. Excellent.
I mean, it's not a game.
It's not like, a game.
It's a picture of some astronauts.
Even when it comes out, it's not going to work.
No, it
Todd
is not
Todd don't make
work.
Them like they work. Todd will fix it up. Todd's like, Todd literally had the gall, the absolute gall. I love Todd Howard's. I don't know him personally. I love his work. I love that Todd Howard had the gall to come out and be like, Skyrim, 10 years later, still, we got it, pretty much. Like, took me a decade, and I pretty much nailed it. Sold it to a bunch of people a lot of times, and it basically works. Anyway, Starfield is really coming really soon, we promise. That was very, I was excited by a lot. Did you pick one thing? What was the one thing, Griffin, that you're most excited about? Before we move on to the J-Man.
Honestly, and it was all cutscene, but the announcement for the new Arcane Austin game, Redfall, co-op vampire slaying game, like, you know, we have no idea what that game's gonna be, but The idea of a co-op sort of looks like class-based, maybe Left 4 Dead. Like, it's tough to, we don't even know what the structure of that game is going to be, but the sort of like almost grindhousey sort of 70s horror vibe of that reveal trailer had me like shuddering with excitement. I thought that shit looked really, really, really good.
Yeah.
A lot of fun color at this year's E3. I feel like the tone has changed even from the last time Xbox had a big showcase, where it's like a little bit more upbeat, I feel like, for a lot of these games than the grimdark sort of stuff that was at their last press conference. I have two that I wanted to talk about real quick. My first is an honorable mention, and then it's my winner for my E3 awards, my Justin McElroy Memorial E3 awards. Number one, and this is just kind of a surprise, but when they showed multiplayer for Halo Infinite, yeah, I had definite a moment where I was like, oh, fuck, I really want to play Halo Infinite. I forget, Halo multiplayer is extremely fun, and I'd like to play it. Look at all these guys with swords and stuff. This looks great. I'd love to play this for a week before everybody gets too good and I can't play anymore. But still, I was surprised at the little hit that I got, because I had been, you know, you've been seeing so many like single player teases for Halo that's like you're kind of thinking about that, and every time there's like a different AI character is like, what's up with Cortana? I'm like, I have no idea. But the multiplayer looked fun. But the number one thing, and this was at the Future Games Showcase, I believe they called it. So it wasn't a big deal to almost anybody but me, but Sam Barlow is back with a new game called Immortality. It's about the disappearance of an actress that filmed 3 movies and then disappeared. FMV coming next year. The writing team on this one, they got Alan Scott from Queen's Gambit, Amelia Gray from Mr. Robot, David Lynch collaborator Barry Gifford, who worked on Wild at Heart and Lost Highway, featuring an FMV game directed by Sam Barlow. I don't mind if I do, actually. I don't mind if I do enjoy this game very much. And I don't actually need the new consoles, because this is probably coming to, like, everything. This is coming to phones and stamps. Like, this is the most exciting. But a lot of stuff looked good. That looked really good. Very disappointed not seeing a new Fable, because shouldn't be surprised.
They said it out loud. They said it out loud. They said the word Fable out loud, and that ain't nothing.
They said the word Fable out loud.
Chris, I mean, Russ, what was your highlight?
Oh, by the way, worst.
Well, hold on. Let's get to worst later. Let's hit the highs.
Plant.
Oh, I was gonna say we're not gonna see that Fable because Playground Games is too busy making an actually good game. Forza Horizon 5, the latest entry in the best franchise of this current generation, by far. And now it is just gone full chaos. The way these games have always worked is big open worlds, beautiful, like kind of X Games knockoff vibe, not the best part of it. But then with the DLC, they'd be like, hey, you're in Legoville and like Hot Wheels town. And it always got very goofy. With this, they're just like, whatever, it's games of service. We're dropping it all on you at once. So you can like race through like bowling pin arenas and all these like zany GTA Online sort of tracks, while also having the like hyper realistic locations that are kind of familiar with the regular game. These racing games, I was so sad when Need for Speed quietly died a tragic death after that kind of like most wanted era. And these games have picked up the torch and run with it. They rule so much. Fresh. How about you?
Griffin mentioned it briefly earlier. If there was literally no announcement that would have hit me more in my direct warm spot than the Metroid, new 2D Metroid game, Metroid Dread. I would rather see Metroid Dread than Prime 4 at this point.
I think most people had, I saw some reactions on Twitter like, yeah, if you want to just keep making 2D Metroid games, you could just take as long as you need on Prime 4.
I've talked about it on the show before. I really, really liked Mercury Steam's Samus Returns, which came out on 3DS. Would love to see it on Switch, but this is exactly what I was talking about. They're using that 2.5D like perspective, but this looks exactly like the Metroid games that I fell in love with. Metroidvania is my favorite genre, and it's because of games like this that it totally clicks for me. I am so totally amped for it.
Out in October, too. That was bonkers.
This game has been rumored for like the last year or so. People actually thought it was going to get revealed at last E3, And it's basically, my understanding is it's been done for quite a while. So it's pretty amazing that it's finally coming out. And I agree with Plant. Like, I think we are on the verge of seeing a Switch Pro announcement probably in July with a launch either timed with Metroid's release or a little bit before, maybe in September. I'm so fucking psyched. You think it'll be day and date?
I would be shocked if we don't see day and date for those.
That would make sense.
I will say not to. I am also extremely excited for Metroid Dread. True to Nintendo fashion, they did a long, like 3-hour Nintendo Treehouse stream after their after the direct, and they showed off some of the Metroid Dread. And I don't know if it was just like the way that they were playing the game or whatever, but it's called Dread apparently because there's this robot that will pursue you from time to time, and if he catches you, he kills you instantly, which I saw happen like 5 or 6 times during this Treehouse stream, and I was like, wow, that seems scary. It doesn't seem particularly fun.
So here's what I sort of gathered from that, just because I've been playing all the old Metroid games recently. I think it's definitely inspired by Fusion, which had like a Samus lookalike that was chasing you throughout the entire thing. The thing that you might have missed is that there are actually 7 of those robots. And I think what they're probably going to do is have like this big open area, and there's going to be zones, and you'll probably have a boss fight with each robot. Okay. And then once you kill that robot, basically the zone opens up and you can freely explore. So you still have that Metroid hit.
Yeah. It's a silly thing to bring up, but I was like watching that on my phone, like, okay. Yeah. I want to just explore and get all the collectibles, but if this robot kills me the second it touches me, that's going to be a
I would be surprised. I think Mercury Steam really knows how to make a good exploration-centric Metroid game, so I think I have a lot of faith in that.
Y'all, should we hop to the...
Well, I promised Justin a chance to talk about real stinkers. I just
have one, and it's unfathomable to me. To the point where it almost comes back around is the fact that Jack Sparrow is being put in Sea of Thieves. The timing on this thing, it says, and the way in which they announce it, the grandeur... It is like a kid disappeared in 2012 and emerged 3 years later with like a Coney 2015 movie. Like, we're still talking about this, right? It took me 3 years to make, but we're gonna get him. Coney 2015. It's the new thing. This is rare. It's owned by an extremely big corporation. Like, it should not be this big of a deal that they got this. They got Jack Sparrow in their pirate game. It's so depressing, especially because there was that very good looking Pirates of the Caribbean game that got canceled. So I'm maybe still a little bit upset about that, but.
I will say that announcement was enough for me to wonder what the fuck's going on in Sea of Thieves. Because they've been updating that thing, and I know that game has a very hardcore, dedicated player base, and I kind of want to know why. And so that trailer was enough
for me. Let's get back in.
Oh my gosh. Let's get back in. Y'all, see what's up. Cass at Polygon, Cass Marshall, they'll give us a tour, and let me tell you, that game with a tour from the hardcore Sea of Thieves expert, it is a trip.
Yeah.
It rules.
I want to go ahead and say most of the Square Enix press conference, mostly because I don't know, I've been playing Final Fantasy 14 so hardcore, and I just wanted like a fucking picture of some of my favorite characters from that game would have been great. But instead, the real just wild pitch for me was Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin, which was the game they closed out, which is a dark, gritty, like even moodier, a Hot Topic Final Fantasy 15 version of the original Final Fantasy game in like the blandest looking action sort of RPG format. That game looked so uninteresting and so dull to me. And I think it might just be in contrast to like how vivid and colorful and imaginative 14 is. It's just like, it reminded me like, oh, this is the exact aesthetic that this franchise chased for a long time that I find so unappealing. And they said, I'm here to kill chaos like a billion times too, which that was actually pretty good. I like that.
I wanted to mention my low point. I've recently found myself to be quite a fan of a lot of games that Capcom makes. Monster Hunter, people are aware I very newly fell in love with Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
And obviously Resident Evil Village, which we've talked about a lot. So I tuned into the Capcom stream expecting exciting news. What I got was Monster Hunter Stories 2, which has the word Monsty in it, which made me want to die. And then a pretty good trailer for Ace Attorney. I'm actually very excited about that, so that looks okay.
Yeah.
But what I was really waiting for was the news of the Resident Evil 4 remake or even footage of the Resident Evil 4 VR game. Instead, after they've shown the Ace Attorney trailer, they're like, but before we do that, what about esports? And I was like, oh, no. And then they talked about esports for like 15 minutes, and then that was the end of the stream, and I was very sad.
Yeah. my low point became a little bit of, not a high point, but I came around to it, was I was pretty bummed with Babylon's Fall. I think that's what it's called.
The new platinum game.
Yeah. And it's like a lot of the talent behind Nier, which obviously I talked too much about, but also Astral Chain, which is a game that I love on Nintendo Switch. I know I'm probably the only one I see grinning fresh. But this look is like very games as a service-y. The thing that kind of turned me around on it is like a day later, somebody compared it to Dragon's Dogma, where they're like, you know, this is a game that's probably not going to show very well, but might feel great. It also has an art design that is, I don't know, like trying to look impressionistic. But yeah, it doesn't look good on a stream. It is like if you were like, how can I make sure my game looks awful when people stream it? You would choose this art design. But maybe it'll look great on like 4K.
The idea of like an online multiplayer platinum game with like progression and customization and shit like that, like that excites me. I think that that's a strong idea, sure, but that it was not a great showing.
It helps to, I just have to remind myself, like, from E3, like, this is all marketing, and really it's a measure of like how good is marketing. There are plenty of games that look great that end up being real stinkers, and there are plenty of games that look like stinkers that end up being real great. So we just don't know.
Also, we somehow all did not acknowledge the existence of the game that inevitably will be the one of all the games at E3 that the four of us collectively enjoy the most and will probably be our big game of next year is Elden Ring. Which will inevitably be the one that we all like the best.
Or,
judging from us, it's one of the very few things we can all agree on. We will probably like that one very much.
Or, as I like to call it, Dark Souls Horse Edition. It looks like Dark Souls, but I guess you do have a horse this time, and that's fine.
Yeah, so they need a horse. What part of what you just said is not
That was not a slam, great. Not a knock. Okay. I love it. It's a brand new world.
We asked you, the people, what you thought of E3 or what sort of stood out to you. Cameron said, overpriced as it may be, finally getting a new WarioWare beats out anything else. One of my favorites from both mine and my 10-year-old brother's childhoods. Otherwise, it's fantastic that Microsoft has built a whole show around Game Pass, thus meaning all the games are affordable.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. That WarioWare
value proposition on that thing is off the charts.
You're talking about WarioWare, right? Yeah, the value proposition of WarioWare getting together looks like really good.
So many games.
Well, can I just say real quick, I didn't see the WarioWare thing. Is it take the, I know it's two player now, is it like take the thing off and hand it to a friend, or is it like pass and play?
No, same screen, multiplayer.
Simultaneous. Yeah, the gimmick is, in this one, you control little characters that can fly around the screen, and each has like different ways of interacting with the games. And so you use those to compete in real time. It looks cool. I think it could be fun.
Both of you holding the same Switch?
I think like separate controllers.
Yeah.
Weird. Okay. Dakota said, for the immediate future, Hades coming to Xbox made me very happy. Otherwise, Outer Worlds 2. Oh, yes! Outer Worlds 2!
Very funny trailer.
As a Microsoft exclusive, got me pumped. I love the tone and characters of the first game. Can't wait for Obsidian to expand on the Fallout, but pleasant energy in the sequel. Yeah, I loved Outer Worlds 2. Outer Worlds. I was very, very... I was excited and kind of surprised. It seems relatively soon, but I guess that
The trailer was also... here's the title, and it was like self-referential,
that's
like,
true.
We have nothing.
Raven said, this probably seems as insignificant to most people, but Story of Seasons and Rune Factory for PlayStation.
Ooh, yeah, Rune Factory 5 got a trailer. I'm stoked for that game. I can't remember if that was timed around E3, but that game looks like a huge improvement over Rune Factory 4, a game I really like.
Steven said, Sable.
Friend of the show, Steven Hilger from Into the Ether.
think they're all friends of the show.
Okay, but they're all friends. You know what, Raven? I'm sorry. You are also a very good friend of the show, and we appreciate you.
Sable. What is Sable?
Sable, it looks like the, what's that artist's name? Oh, my gosh. He did work on the version of Dune that never came out.
Oh, oh my God. Oh.
Oh, Todorovsky?
Yeah, well, that's the director, but Mobius was, I think, one of the artists.
Oh, okay.
Artists who worked on it.
Mean Gene Okerlund.
I can't remember.
Anyway, Sable looks cool. It was announced at 2018 and E3, and I guess now has a demo and a release date. That was exciting to Steven. Also, the biggest pleasant surprise was Metroid Dread. I got into Metroid via Fusion, and Dread seems to be a spiritual successor, at least based on the vibes in the trailer. Extremely excited for both. Absolutely. I mean, Metroid Dread was very exciting for me. This week, what else have you guys been playing? What else
I wanted to talk about Game Builder Garage on Switch.
How is that?
It's great. I picked it up and just finished. So it basically has these 7 interactive tutorials where it leads you through a number of steps to make different games. So it starts you out with like a very simple kind of platformer dealio, and then there's like a one that uses the motion sensor in the Switch to like roll a ball around, and there's a racing game and a little like 3D adventure game, and it is really cool. And then you can sort of put those games in your own sort of collection, your own library, which you can then share with other people. And you can punch in like these codes to download other people's games off the internet. And they're like very, very simple things. It honestly, the biggest touch point you could use is like Little Big Planet 2, when they started to introduce like these visual programming concepts. I think Little Big Planet 2 introduced like the microchip that you could like put a bunch of logic on and then like put that on different shit. And it basically like opened up, hey, now you can make Doom or whatever. Somebody's already made Doom in Game Builder Garage. I don't think it's going to be like Little Big Planet level where like it has a huge long tail and people are always talking about like, hey, here's what you can accomplish on Game Builder Garage. But as somebody who has like a very basic understanding of programming language and how programming works in games, I fucking loved sort of tearing through the interactive tutorials. And I also think like if you're somebody who is curious about programming, this is a really good starting point to like, you're not going to know, you know, Java by the end of it, but you'll have a really, really good grasp on the basic concepts of programming by these little creatures called nodons that do all these different functions that you can connect together to make games. It also has that, like, what was the cardboard? I can't believe I forgot this. The Nintendo.
Labo.
Yeah, the Labo, like, that aesthetic of just, like, everything is so pleasant and it's so, like, nice to kind of, like, walk through things and figure it out. And there are little programming puzzles that you have to solve to move on that are also really enjoyable. I think it's great. I finished all the interactive tutorials over the course of, like, a few days, so it's not, like, gonna take you a super long time. But I'm also the smartest man alive. May take you a little bit longer if you don't have a big, cool brain like mine.
I wanted to talk about a game that everyone can play at home without paying money. It's called Tunic. They released a time-limited demo. So I think the demo gets removed sometime in the week of June, like late June, basically. So play it now if you can. You can play it on Xbox One. You can play it on Xbox Series X. I think it's just on Xbox platforms. It's basically a throwback to like Zelda 1 era, which is to say it's a top-down like action RPG like Zelda 1. You play as a fox. It uses like low poly art style and is just very focused on like exploration. Like, hey, oh, there's like a secret, you know, cave behind this wall that I need to break open, and there's pots to break, and you're finding different items. It has like a just like a retro Zelda vibe that I found really charming and easy to jump into, while, you know, as with all indie games, has a Dark Souls-y thing where there are like effectively bonfires that you can rest at to regain your health, and then you're finding shortcuts to like backtrack the bonfires. Really just very charming look and feel. It has no release date. It's been in development for fucking 5 or 6 years at this point.
Yeah.
It feels really good, but again, it's just a demo slice, so who knows? But maybe, who knows, this year, I don't know. That'd be nice. But play it for free right now because you there's no reason not to.
It sounds good.
Next week, we're going to talk about the best games so far. Just so far. It's been, I would say, a bit of a slow year so far, and it's going to get slower as we go. But we're going to take a moment to just take a step back and say, hey, look at all these games. Which are the best? Which were we too kind to? Which were we too mean to? You know, sort of a half year in review.
Witcher 3.
It'll be fun. Witcher 3. What?
No. I also wanted to mention there's a good shot that I won't be here next week because I'm very, very close to having a baby.
What? Yeah.
You're not showing at all.
Thank you. Thank you. Very spelt.
I think he is. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So
is this the announcement? Because I thought we had like embargoed this and we had a whole rollout with you like showing a little bit of a bump and like coming soon on Snapchat.
Or yeah, gonna, I've been posting my stories plan. And then forgot that my Instagram was private, so no one can actually see them. So I apologize for that. yeah, so...
But Justin Jr. will be here before you know it.
Jeju, love it.
What? No, I don't think that's exactly right.
So yeah, I'll be gone for a little bit, just a heads
I'll
up
miss
there.
You, Russ.
Not because I'm fighting with everyone, although just a little bit, maybe that.
Always a little bit. we got a Twitter at the Besties Pod. You can follow us there. But we really would appreciate if you would, leave a rating or review on a podcast catcher of your choice, or spread the word. You know, the word of mouth is the best way for this show to continue to exist. It lives by your good graces. So please continue that support. But that is going to do it for us. So until next time, my name is Justin McElroy. Be sure to join us again next time for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends with the world's best games?
Besties!